Mondays mean Champ and Chump. Get your votes in for Champ and Chump of the weekend. My Champ of the weekend actually is my nephew, Logan Evans, who went out and threw five innings yesterday for a team called the Seattle Mariners. He got the call up over the weekend, and Logan just was great. It was awesome to see. He's overcome a lot, and to go five innings, two hits, two earned runs, three walks, three strikeouts in his major league debut. You know what was funny? I watched him walk in. They had had Roots Northwest, the network that was carrying it, and watched him make the walk from the bullpen with Cal Raleigh, their catcher, you know, into the dugout after pregame warmups. Then I watched him walk out to the mound, and I'm looking at him like, I mean, I know this kid. It's so weird. He's nervous. First pitch of the game, one hopper right back to him. Perfect way to start a major league career. He just fields it cleanly, a couple steps towards first, underhands it to get it out. He was great, and I'm so fired up for him. Great situation there in Seattle, an organization that really has harnessed his talent and made his major league debut, got the win. My champ of the weekend, my nephew Logan.
I love it. I think it's a great story. My champ's Javi Baez. Let's give him some love as well. 5-7 over the weekend, had a couple of doubles, three RBIs. He had a walk, stolen base. He took the extra base from first to second on a fly ball to right, and he's really pushing the envelope there. And he's just a great base runner. And he's a good baseball player. He's had a horrible time here with the Tigers over the last 2.5 years. But this season, it's different. He's now hitting .301 on the season, and he's got his OPS up to a respectable league average-ish at .716. But that number is going up and up and up because he's starting to get that extra base power back with a couple doubles he hit over the weekend. Let's hope he continues to hit and starts pumping it over the fence.
My chump of the weekend is NBA officiating, specifically at the end of that Detroit Knicks game. I don't know if I need to say much more.
I'm going to go with Jax Albrecht, who is the son of the defensive coordinator, Jeff Albrecht, from the Falcons. Jax is the guy who went out and started prank calling Shedeur Sanders and telling him that he was drafted, and then and pranked him and hung up on him. And the reason he got the phone number to the private number for Shedeur is because his dad, unfortunately, had his iPad out, and who thought that his son was going to go over and copy the number and start prank calling him when his son is, I think, 21 years old. Like, you should know better than that. And it was just a bad look all around.
It really is. And I can't believe the stories that are coming out today that not only was Shedeur called, prank called, Tyler Warren was, Penn State tight end Mason Graham from Michigan, Isaiah Bond from Texas, Kyle McCord from Syracuse, all got prank calls telling them they've been drafted, and one unnamed draft prospect, he got called and told he was traded after he was drafted. The whole thing is weird to me. It's mean-spirited. I think the trying to go viral or be famous is kind of a disease. I don't know why so many people do the dumbest things to get attention, but I think it's a disease, Scott. I think it's a disease.
All right. It's stupid.
So one of the biggest stories out of the draft, and we're probably not going to dwell on it, but Shedeur Sanders falling, I think it is a record-setting cautionary tale of how one sabotages their own draftability with the pre-draft behavior. I think this will be used as more and more stories are coming out. I don't know how valid some of these things that are floating around social media are, but there are some credible reporters now reporting on what Shedeur, how he came across to quarterback needy teams and otherwise. I mean, if a quarterback needy team with a pick in the top three, if you're going to meet with him and you're not prepared, I think moving forward, unfortunately, the sad part about this is going to be the standard setter by which everyone else will be measured in botching the pre-draft process.
So this is from a CBS sports story, and according to CBS Sports NFL insider Jonathan Jones, Sanders' slide is a reflection of how he carried himself through the pre-draft process. An unnamed coach even told NFL media that his interview with Sanders was, quote, the worst formal interview I've ever been in my life, which leads to several other questions. Does Sanders struggle in every interview? Did he purposefully bomb his interviews with teams that he didn't want to go to? Todd McShay of The Ringer reported recently that Sanders' interview with the Giants and Brian Daboll was one that did not go well. He said, quote, Shador didn't have a great interview with Brian Daboll in a private visit. An install package came in, preparation wasn't there for it, got called out on it, didn't like that, and Brian didn't appreciate him not liking it. So, obviously, the Giants passed on him, and they moved back into the first round to take Jackson Dart, which I thought was very savvy by the Giants. Mm-hmm. You got Abdul Carter, and then they get Jackson Dart. That's very smart. But this is just, this is interesting. And then there was, saw the report that Shiloh Sanders actually dropped his dad as his agent and got another agent, and you know, ended up, I think he's with Tampa now or something. But it asks, there are a million questions about this. What role does Deion play in any of this? You know, what advice was he given the kid? If the kid goes into interviews and like, I ain't playing in New York, I don't want to play for the Giants, and you tank the interview, that's beyond stupid. You know, it's like, if you don't want to play for the Giants, then tell me you don't want to play for the Giants and don't do the interview. Or was this just that bad of an interview and that you didn't prepare yourself? They give you an install package to look at, dissect beforehand. So when you come to the meeting, you know where they're standing at, and you can have a discussion about, you know, what you do as a football player. And if he's not ready for that, that's completely on him. Word like that gets around, and, you know, teams were just passing on him left and right to the point where Cleveland, it was almost like a mercy pick by Cleveland in the fifth round. They had already taken a quarterback.
Yeah, it might have been. I feel bad, and I don't. I feel bad because my guess is, and again, we're watching this from the outside, I don't think it's an illogical conclusion to draw, that adults in his life have let him down. I don't feel bad because how are you treating people? And this is a job interview. Now, I think there's a lot of BS out there too, okay? And everything, we've learned a long time ago not to believe everything on the internet. But I can't think of any other logical conclusion, because you might not think he's a first-round talent. But, you know, one of the things that is becoming clear is if you are not going to be the starter, okay, if you're not going to be the starter, you have to be in a position to humbly support the starter. You're the backup. You're the development guy. You're not a distraction. You're doing everything you can to support the starter and to prepare yourself and be ready if your number is called. And we get back to, did he come across as a guy that would be a good developmental quarterback in an organization that will not be a distraction, will humbly support the starter and grow over time and be ready when their number is called? It sounds like, because there's the difference between a quarterback needy team and a non-quarterback needy team. Getting passed by quarterback needy teams is one thing. Getting passed by teams that would maybe take a chance on the skill set for so many rounds that wouldn't even bring him in to be a backup or a developmental guy really has me buying into all of the stuff that's out there, that this guy's draft ability was sabotaged by his pre-draft meetings and behaviors and visits and lack of workouts and otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, there were six quarterbacks taken ahead of him. Cam Ward, Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck, Jalen Milroe, and Dylan Gabriel. All were taken ahead of Shador Sanders. Now, can you make the argument that Jackson Dart and Tyler Shuck were more highly thought of than Shador prior to any of this interview process? I mean, there were lots of reports out there that Shuck had impressed lots of people.
Yep.
And that Jackson Dart was after doing more deep diving and looking at film, that, wow, he's really impressive. But Shador Sanders, when you look at his film, he looks great. It seems to me that there clearly was something that was done with these interviews that turned teams off to him. Now, did he do it deliberately, or was he just lazy in the interview? Either way, it's not a good look.
Yeah, either way, it played a role, it seems like, right? I agree with you, Gator. Like, in my opinion, it's nothing to do with the film or tape, because he's better than a lot of the quarterbacks on tape than the quarterbacks that got drafted ahead of him. The reason he fell, it seems like, whether it was the interview process or the way he rubbed teams, you know, or and things like that. Jay Glazer, who's pretty connected in the league,
very
right?
Connected.
He tweeted this a few days ago. This is nothing about specifically about Shador, but he tweeted this. It's about the draft. Interesting thing came up in my draft prep calls. For years, teams have pulled players off their board for A, injury concerns, or B, character concerns. A third category has been added to most teams I've talked to now. The third category is doesn't love football. Now, I don't know how you want to characterize that as someone who doesn't love football or not, but if they're talking about other things and doing other things and football doesn't seem to be their number one priority, a lot of teams, I feel like this is kind of like a Dan Campbell Lions effect, by the way, they have added this category to pulling guys off their board. Now, if there's an interview or there's a clip out there with Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders just kind of throwing the ball around.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then Shador is asking Cam what he wants to do outside of football. And Cam's like, I just want to be known for football. That's all I care about. I just football player first. And Shador's like, no, man, what about being a rapper? Because, you know, Shador likes to perform and all that stuff. And Cam's like, no, I just want to play football. Does that play a role into how much you love football? And did that make him slide even more?
I mean, that video clip does not do Shador any favors. Nope. I saw that yesterday. It did not do him any favors. But we'll see what happens. So, you know, now Shador is going to compete with Dylan Gabriel and Kenny Pickett to see who's going to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
Dude, Dylan Gabriel got screwed. I mean, seriously, to get drafted by a team and go, all right, I'm your developmental guy. And then get drafted by somebody that's going to garner so much attention as Shedeur Sanders. Like, if I were Dylan Gabriel, I'd be pissed.
Well, that, or I'd be extra motivated to show everybody how much football means to you. Because if you look back at Dylan Gabriel, this guy had suffered horrific injuries in his career and came back to keep playing because clearly he loves playing football. Just keep up with that attitude. And, you know, maybe Shedeur does. Maybe it was his awesome game, or maybe it was just a misstep by Shedeur Sanders with not being prepared for the interviews. And we'll see how he is going forward. But it just a weird, strange vibe throughout the draft when he wasn't taken on the first night. And I thought for sure, oh, he's going to go on the first couple picks in the second night. And that didn't happen. And now you're going day three in the fifth round.
248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson. We'll get to your phone calls and feedback. Get those champ and chump votes in. Hey, let's talk about the Pistons and that loss yesterday. That's a tough one, man, for so many reasons. And people are mad today. They are mad, and justifiably so. That at 1220 here on 97.1 The Ticket. Hey, a great lawn is like a great sports team. It takes expertise and a little extra care to really stand out. That's where True Green comes in. They are the local experts in Detroit and the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. So they know a thing or two about keeping your grass looking like a fairway. And here's the best part. It's more affordable than you think. They'll even match any competitor's price. Plus, True Green backs it all up with a satisfaction guarantee. Are you not happy? They'll come back between visits to make it right. Don't wait. Head to truegreen.com today. Let the pros do the work while you sit back and enjoy the results. That is Brad Holmes, obviously speaking about, you know, people that are second guessing their drafts. And I get it. I think if you're in an NFL team and you're in all the meetings and you get to meet with all the prospects and you familiar with the big board that you have put together based upon your career and your knowledge and your football expertise, you might at times get fed up with people second guessing. And I don't think he sounded particularly offended there, but just explaining, hey, here's why we might see things differently than you. I've heard him do it other times where I thought he was a little bit more condescending, but then again, I don't even really care all that much. He doesn't need to justify what he does to anybody. But bottom line is, it's a draft that people are curious about. They're curious about it. 248-539-9797. Let's go to Brandon in Shelby Township. You're on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up?
So isn't it kind of ironic that the coach with the biggest ego, like Sanders, has the son that he must have an ego big enough to scare people off, you know?
Is it ironic or is it exactly what you'd expect?
I mean, it's exactly what I'd expect because it seems like he has a chip on his shoulder. But he kind of reminds me of Jameis Winston. You know, Jameis Winston was a great college player, but he had a terrible attitude. You know, he was doing things in college that kind of scared people off. Like, I know he went high, but you see the Lions draft people based on culture. They want to build the culture. But if you get a person like Sanders, even if you draft him high and you make him your starting quarterback, you don't want to ruin the culture in the locker room.
Well, they seriously emphasize culture and fit and football character in Detroit, right? I mean, this is nothing that is done here. Brad Holmes says this all the time. It's intentional. And I can't even imagine if the Lions were a quarterback needy team, and if any of this Shedeur Sanders stuff that's floating around, and some of it is coming from credible reporters now, if true, it could be. Can you imagine him interviewing, having an interview with the Lions and not being prepared?
No.
He'd be off the board.
I can't imagine him in the locker room, because even though he might be a backup or he's a starter, like, he's going to come into the locker room. He's just going to want to be the number one guy. He's going to want to get all the attention.
It's hard not to, Brandon, it's hard not to see that as that being an issue. And that's why the whole idea of being a backup probably didn't appeal to teams that would otherwise have taken him. Would he be a good backup quarterback? And all that comes with being a backup quarterback.
You know, when all of a sudden none were there, only there were 13 quarterbacks drafted by 12 different teams, because Cleveland obviously took the two. But you look at, like, some teams you thought were going to go early for a quarterback.
Yep.
Like Cleveland. And they waited to the third round, the end of the third round, before they went with Dylan Gabriel. Pittsburgh. Everybody thought Pittsburgh's going to draft the quarterback. They did. In the sixth round, with the ninth pick, Will Howard from Ohio State. The Raiders. Thought the Raiders going to draft one. They did. In the sixth round, it was Cam Miller from North Dakota State. Well, here's what I found interesting. The last quarterback taken in the draft,
yeah,
in the seventh round, 15th pick overall in the seventh round, Quinn Ewers,
yep,
from Texas. Now, I mean, this goes back to what we did years ago. Brad Kaya, before the season began, was going to be thought of as one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, and then the Lions select him in the seventh round or whatever it was.
Yep.
It's what a difference the season makes. But this one was crazy because Shedeur had a great season, and it clearly seems like it's what he said in interviews, or how he prepared in interviews, that knocked him off that pedestal of being a guy who was going to be taken in the first round, where he wasn't taken until the fifth round. And the quarterbacks ahead of him, you know, interesting quarterbacks.
All right, so TV talking heads nationally were talking about what happened in Detroit yesterday at the end of the game, the non-foul call. It is awfully frustrating. Awfully frustrating. Let me be clear on this. The only reason the Pistons lost the game is not the not foul call. However, that is a call, a not call, that hurt Detroit maybe irreparably in this series. If that call is made, the odds of winning that game improve dramatically. And when the league comes out and admits that they blew the call, nobody's a winner here. It doesn't help Detroit in any way. Certainly, the Knicks probably don't want to hear that they could have not deserved to win the game, and their fans don't want to hear it. The refs doesn't help them. It's a brutal situation. And I hate controversial calls and no calls, because it takes away from the fun part of sports, which is the games. How officials can not altogether collectively miss a call like that, when the contact was so obviously there, is a frustrating thing. And I don't mind talking about it at great length. It was a classic NBA last second Detroit screw job. And it feels like we have been on the losing end of calls more often than not in Detroit. And it leads to Detroit versus everybody kind of attitudes. The bottom line here is, that call hurt Detroit's chances of winning. Separate topic. So did missing some shots. Cade missed two in the last minute 10. So did turnovers. Pistons had too many, and too many careless ones. So did their inability to slow down and stop, specifically Karl Anthony Towns. Like, at the end of that game, Karl Anthony Towns made shots and Cade Cunningham didn't. And I still love Cade. I see a future Cade Cunningham talking about what he learned in the Knicks series years from now.
Yeah, but in fairness, those shots that Karl Anthony Towns knocked down were not high percentage shots.
No.
But he knocked them down like that's what he does all the time. And obviously it hurts the Pistons to not have Isaiah Stewart out there. But looking at it from the other perspective, from the Knicks perspective, as they're flying out of Detroit to head back to New York,
yep,
they are breathing a giant sigh of relief. Not only because of the missed call at the end, the non-call at the end of the game, but the Knicks played poorly. Or we could say the Pistons' defense just dialed it up. But the Knicks shot 37% from the field. They made 11 out of 18 free throws. That's it. And they got hammered on the boards, 54-38. They did not play a good basketball game. And somehow, they walk out of it winners. Now, why? Pistons turn it over too much. The Pistons didn't shoot that well themselves. In fact, from three-point range, the Pistons were dismal, with shooting 24% from three-point land. And when it all came down to a final play, the referees swallowed the whistle on a play that was clearly a foul because they admitted afterwards it was clearly a foul and it should have been called.
Sucks.
They didn't call. But, you know, the question that you brought up is this, or the statement you said, is this going to sink the Pistons' chances? And it feels like it would. I don't think you're counting them out yet either. I think that this team is going to have to come up with their best effort tomorrow night. I mean, it literally is must win.
I don't think they're going to win this series now.
It's hard to win a series when you're down 3-1. I think the percentages are very low. I haven't looked it up, but I think very low to come back from 3-1.
Now, for people who say it shouldn't have come down to a last-second play in the first place, a couple things I always feel like, when that is said, that means you think the Pistons should handily win every game, and that's not the case in this series. I think it's foolish to believe that that's the case, and they're going to play. When you're the underdog, I think you're doing a hell of a job when you're the underdog of giving yourself a chance to win at the end. Now, if you're talking about blowing a 10-point lead, the double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. Yeah, don't be fooled, though. It coincided with Brunson coming back in the game, which unfortunately is like the bitterest of realities. Is that
played
guy
with a prosthetic leg. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah, I was with a prosthetic leg. It's like Kerry Von Erich. It was unbelievable.
Do you think that there was some embellishment of that injury?
Yes.
Okay, 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket.
Hey, if you have any problems with your garage doors, there's one place to call. It's Precision Garage Door Service. You can give them a call at 1-800-DOOR-REPAIR or visit the web at precisiondoormi.com, and you're going to want to. I've used them in the past, needed some repairs done in my garage doors. I went to the phone, called them, and they came out immediately, diagnosed all the issues, and they fixed all the problems. They're awesome. In fact, all calls are answered 24/7 by a live person. They offer the industry's leading warranty. It's called the Precision Promise. This company's great. A locally owned company in Southeast Michigan since 2001. And if you need new garage doors, this is who you call as well. In fact, they've got worry-free financing available. Give them a call today at 1-800-DOOR-REPAIR. Or, again, you can schedule an appointment online at your convenience at precisiondoormi.com.
Before we get back to your phone calls, just two comments on that. One is, had they called that foul, you wouldn't have a lead story on national shows being, how do they make that call? How is it possible they called that foul? That wouldn't have been a story. Two is, it's a sad state of affairs where you're better off, once he's in the air, it's a sad state of affairs, you're better off just simply jumping into the guy to get the foul call and giving yourself no shot to make the basket than what Tim Hardaway tried to do, which is shoot and make the shot. So the term ethical scorer that gets used here on the show all the time, if he had been an unethical scorer and jumped into him, he would have got the three free throws, one would imagine. But alas, Gator, that did not happen. And it's a big part of the game four storyline and the third win for the Knicks.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Down 3-1. It's not going to be easy. You would expect the Pistons to come back with their best effort tomorrow night. But, you know, part of that's going to have to be in the form of Malik Beasley. He's got to be a scorer in this game. They need additional scoring outside of Cade Cunningham. Cade's done a lot. Had a triple-double in the game yesterday. You know, some say he hasn't done enough. I disagree. I think he's been great in this series. And he's got his limitations and he's got his things he's got to work on. Clearly in an off season, you got to work on taking better care of the basketball, making better decisions, because he had way too many turnovers in the game yesterday. They got to try to control that as best they can. I don't know what the answer to that is in the short term is if it's you just let somebody else handle the ball. And then eventually you get it into his hands when he's ready to drive and score. But they've got to find a better way to take care of the basketball. They got to find a better way to share the basketball. And they need other players to step up and score. I think you need to get that guaranteed double-double from Jalen Duren. It wasn't there last night. Yeah, 17 rebounds is huge. But 6 points isn't. Got to be more involved with the offense. And the same thing goes for Sarah Thompson. But really, I think it comes down to Malik Beasley. He's the guy you absolutely count on to knock down big-time three-point shots, and he just hasn't been a big-time shooter in this series. Certainly nowhere near what he was in the regular season.
So, yeah, there's a bunch of things that led up to that final possession for the Pistons, and I'll get to that one first. Is Tim Hardaway Jr. said it best. It was blatant. It was a blatant foul call. It was so blatant that within 60 seconds of the game ending, the refs admitted they got the call wrong. They admitted it so quickly that the reporters were able to ask Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns about it, saying, hey, the pool report came out. They admitted they made the wrong call. What do you guys think? That's how fast they admitted they were wrong. Now, how do we get to that point? Yeah, turnovers, secondary scoring, and I think inexperience all played a huge role in how we got to that final possession, because they were down so early because of all the turnovers, all the empty possessions. In the first half, it seemed like they couldn't get a defensive rebound where the Knicks were getting second, third chances, and they built a lead. Luckily, the Pistons were able to fight back, but that 11-point lead that they had built in the second half in the fourth quarter evaporated because the turnovers came back to bite them. They're just not strong with the ball. It's not just decision-making, but I feel like there's no urgency to keep the ball. They treat it like they don't care what happens to it. You know, Asar Thompson, Ron Holland will throw a cross-court pass willy-nilly. Like, it doesn't matter. Cade, he plays at a really measured pace, but also when he gets double-teamed, I'd like them to show more urgency, you know, instead of saying with that same pace where, like, oh, things are slowing down. No, man, things are speeding up right now. And I think his teammates need to help him get in better passing lanes so he can find them. Thank God for Schroeder. That's your second ball handler you're talking for, looking for, Gator, because there's no other ball handling really that you can count on.
248-539-9797. Let's get to your phone calls. Logan in Detroit, you're on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Logan.
What's up going, guys?
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I was wanting to call because I really do think that this is the reason why I probably won't be able to get into the NBA this entire series, just based on, down the floor on both ends, it feels like the refs could call fouls or not call fouls, and they'll have stretches where they will, they'll have stretches where they won't. I feel like it's turning into almost the sport of soccer where, like, you'll have guys like, I think it was in game three, Josh Hart, who dunks the ball to literally tie the game. And instead of celebrating with his team and getting down the floor, he's instantly looking at the ref and asking him why he didn't call a foul. And, you know, that mixed with the missed call at the end of the game there, it's just so polarizing that it makes me want to ever complain about a flag in football ever again, even though I know I will.
You know, Logan, the thing about it is it does feel like after virtually every miss, a player turns and looks at the official. And I don't know if the league needs to talk about it with its players. It doesn't help the credibility of the game, and yet you can't tell people
they make a bucket.
Yeah, you can't tell people not to express frustration or I don't know if anything does need to be done. Maybe if your team is competing for NBA championships, and Logan, I think if the Pistons keep winning, I don't know. Are you gonna get to the point where you stop watching it if they come back and win this series and advance to the next round because you find it so frustrating? Or are you gonna stop watching because the Pistons get eliminated?
No, I mean, honestly, it's one of those things where I'm always gonna watch Detroit teams because they're Detroit and that's what I do. But the regular season, like, I know the playoffs are amplified and everything like that, but it's like I really do not think I'll ever be able to get in the NBA at its current state with just the way that the game is played and just kind of the way it's officiated and stuff. And I do not know if it's like maybe a thing from the NBA, because I know that they implement changes quite a bit, honestly, maybe more than every other sport. And maybe they have to implement a change of like, hey, we're going to let guys play now. Like, we're going to stop calling any more fouls. Like, we're going to make it apparent that they're going to maybe let guys play a little bit more. And maybe that will stop the flopping and stop all that kind of stuff. I don't know.
This is a physical series, but there's also little subtleties of it. Like, Carl Anthony Towns is such a massive human. I think he's difficult to officiate. I think guys bounce off him. I think he can overwhelm people with his physicality. And I feel like if Carl Anthony Towns got his way, he would shoot north of 60 free throws a game. Because that's the way he plays the game.
Yeah, but he wants it both ways. He wants to be able to be physical, but you can't be physical with him.
I know.
You know, and for the people that are saying, well, you know, this is the way you wanted it, Piston fans, a physical series, it's been called that way. The game was called like that. That's for like, you know, like a physical series can mean more than just like, hey, a straight up foul. It's more like positioning, fighting for positions, boxing out, right? You get physical. No one wants to get those ticky-tack calls. A bump? A blatant contact on a foul shot to win the game, or foul shot on a shot to win the game, is a foul. That you can't foul a guy shooting a shot. That doesn't matter if the game's been called physical or not. And I think I feel for that fan, Doug, because he's like, maybe he just parachuted in, and then this is the game he watched. He's gonna hate the NBA. He's gonna hate the refs.
248-539-9797. You guys hear me talk about Twin Peaks a lot, usually about how they offer up the best game day atmosphere in the state, how they serve up the coldest draft beer you've ever had. They have the beautiful and hospitable Twin Peaks girls serving it all up. And, of course, that scratch kitchen. Well, Twin Peaks is offering up something new. Catering. That food you crave, well, it can now be yours at work, at your house party, even your tailgate. They offer up a wide variety of party packs featuring favorites like their chicken fried chicken, street tacos, char-grilled salmon, steak salads, and so much more. There isn't a better sports bar in the world that can compete with their food, and now, if you can't make it to their favorite lodge or for lunch, you can have it at work. Their wing packs are perfect for tailgates. Call the store and speak to a manager for details, or check them out on ezcater.com. That's ezcater.com. If you've never tried their food, you gotta try their wings, and also watch their Tigers in action tonight. Stop by the closest lodge to see for yourself. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, scenic views. That's Jamie Bickerstaff after the game. 248-539-9797. Yeah, yep, there's things they can do better, and there's things the refs can do better. 248-539-9797. Jay in Detroit. What's up, Jay?
Hey, good show, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, my lunch break here. Listen, Kade, I think, needs to stop dribbling so much. And he's had more turnovers, I think, than anybody in these last three games. And I think Dennis Schroeder should be in the game a little bit more. I like Asur Thompson, but I think Schroeder does a better job on Brunson than anybody else does.
You know, I've noticed him giving him problems. There have been a few blow-bys as well. They really need to evaluate getting more out of Asur, because I think he's a very, very talented player, and I think he is a defensive asset. But I feel like there's been rebounds he hasn't grabbed. I feel like on the offensive end, he's dropped some passes directly to him. I think there were times on the offensive end, Jay, yesterday when the shot clock's winding down and the Pistons ran into way too many shot clock situations where Asar Thompson's the guy with the ball in his hands. And I'm like, it's 5-4-3-2-1. And I'm thinking, if I'm the Knicks, this is the Piston on the floor. I want to be taking the shot, unfortunately.
Right. Totally agree.
Yep.
You know, what about Schroeder?
Love him.
You think he should play more? I mean,
Well, at whose expense?
I think he's saying at Thompson's expense.
Yeah, right. Give him a few of Thompson's minutes.
Well, he's playing more than Thompson is right now.
At least he did it last game.
Yeah.
Say it again.
I think he's got more minutes in this series than Asar does, but let me double check that. But if you're saying you want even more than that, you know, I mean, maybe that's something they consider. Schroeder's experience, and I mean, he just seems like this is a trade that's paid off in so many ways.
Yeah, he's a competent player, plays good defense. He can keep up with Brunson, and he's been knocking down some big shots. He's got a confidence about him. It doesn't seem like the moment's too big for him. The experience is there, and he's should be playing a real vital role for this Pistons team and why they can win this series, and yet they're down 3-1. I don't blame him much at all. But finding extra minutes for him, I don't know if that's the answer either. I think just maybe utilizing him more as somebody to help carry the ball up the court as opposed to Cade Cunningham. Maybe that's the answer.
He's hit some big shots. He's playing 7 minutes more per game in this series than Ausar Thompson.
You could tell that he is – the inexperience isn't there with him. He's got swag that the other players don't have. He's got that confidence. Mm-hmm. He's been to these in these situations before. He's been in the playoffs before. The moment is not too big for him. But he's not the guy. You know what I mean? He's only a guy who's supposed to help the guys.
He's a complimentary player.
Yeah, and so that's where the other guys got to step up. I think Schroeder's been great this series. He's doing the best he can. He's undersized to guard Brunson, but he's quick and pesky. So he's trying to, you know, pick him up full court and all that stuff, and that's fine. But when Brunson gets to his spot, I mean, he's just not long enough to really affect the shot. Offensively, he's creating. He's bringing up the ball. He's able to hit open shots. So I think Schroeder's – we need more from Ausar, not from Schroeder.
248-539-9797. Rich is next. Hi, Rich.
What's up, fellas?
Hey.
Well, on the Pistons, you know, they got the vets. We got the kids primarily. Our vets, to me, are not doing enough. We got the injuries, and yet all that being said, all these games have been close. We've been right there. We were robbed yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't even know what to say. That was a devastating loss. It would have meant so much to them to go back 2-2 and have a chance really to win this. And I'm a little disappointed that all this year between Bickerstaff, who's done a great job, and between Cade, who has shown like almost a robotic tendency to improve every 15, 20 games, that neither one of them have been able to fix this turnover thing at all this season. And in the end, I think that's what's really getting them. And that's what they got to work on in the offseason, besides getting the number two guy in here.
No doubt. Look, Rich, the weird thing with Cade's turnovers, and I don't know if it's a strength issue or not, it feels like when he takes the ball to the basket, it gets batted away from him more than it should. And
yeah,
look, I make a bad pass. Somebody makes a great defensive play. They jump a passing lane. They get a knock away. There's those. The number of times that Cade starts a drive to the basket and the ball gets poked out of his hands, is it strength? Is it hand size? What is it? Why is it happening so much to Cade? And how do you
come back? They've also got to address the when the doubles or triple teams, when it comes, you know, he's got to make better and quicker decisions when the doubles come, because when you become that star player, that's what you're going to get. That's just the bottom line. That's what the star players get. You're going to get double team. You're going to get blitz. You're going to get pressure coming up the court. So that has to be addressed. But I just want to say this in regards to the Pistons and the Lions. One thing, as you get older and you're watching sports, you learn the things that you can't control that are going to keep happening. You learn, if you're a smart fan, it just is what it is. Like, the referees do not like Detroit teams. We're always crashing the party, especially the Pistons. Like, the Lions won over some people this year. The Pistons, because of style of play, like, our style of play developed because of how we're treated. And because of how we're treated, our style of play kicks back to that rugged, we don't give a F style. And I think they should keep that and just come in knowing the refs aren't going to like us. That's just the way it's going to be. We're going to have to beat the other teams and the refs the same way Isaiah and them did.
Well, Rich, I don't know that the evidence would suggest you're correct. If you look at the best Piston teams that really competed for championships, party crashers, and were always the physical team.
Yeah, they were. And then, you know, the league didn't like that. And they certainly didn't like that with the Bad Boys. And then with the going to work Pistons, slowing down the game. The NBA doesn't like seeing games where you get point totals in the 80s. They don't like that. Mm-hmm. And they change rules and they change how they call things. And now the Pistons are going at it again. They've got finally back in the playoffs. They've got a good basketball team, not a great basketball team. It's a good competitive basketball team, and they play physical. They let them play yesterday. I mean, the referees let them play is the bottom line, even to the point of the last call of the game. They didn't call it because, hey, we've been letting them play physical the entire round. But here's, I think the simple solution, if you all things being equal, if you could fix one thing, it's Cade's turnovers. He's turning the ball over more than he did in the regular season. Regular season, he averaged 4.5 turnovers per game. It's up to 6 in the playoffs. All his other numbers are basically the same. Still averaging 26 points a game, 9 assists per game. He's averaging more rebounds per game by almost 3 than he did in the regular season. But his three-point percentage is way down by 10%, and he's turned the ball over more, way more.
Let's go to James in Westland. You're next. Hi, James.
How you doing, sir? Just to speak on your previous caller, and you're wondering about the Cade and his turnover issue. I don't so much worry about that simply because it's his first run in the playoffs. It's part of his maturation as a player. If you remember, 2-3 years ago, Jaylen Brown, I think, set an NBA record for the most turnovers during a playoff run. And now Jaylen Brown is a top-flight player who has a tight handle. It's just getting used to that physicality, you know, from regular season to the playoffs. So I don't worry about Cade with that. My issue is these officials and they're messing up the administrative part of the game. I mean, it's just a simple fact that when I watch NBA games now, people shoot free throws and the shooter steps over the line before the ball hits the rim.
It's so weird. It's so weird how many lane violations there are.
That is a lane violation. That's been a lane violation since Moby Dick was a minnow. And I mean, I'm not to try to toot the horn. I played 4 years of college basketball.
There we go.
I've never in my life heard of legal contact with a shooter. That's a new term. I'm watching the press conference last night, and Hart for the Knicks, they asked him about that last play, and he said, yeah, I made contact, but was it legal contact? I don't know. I've never heard of legal contact with a shooter. And
by the way, James,
don't recognize this today's NBA.
Where did you play?
I played at Northern Michigan University.
Gotcha. And legal contact with a shooter. That's hysterical. But, yeah, I mean, it's what we got. It's the way, hate to say it, it feels like just the way Detroit gets treated. 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket.